love that song. That song means it's Monday night again. I am your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. With me tonight, I have the godfather himself, Chip Gibson.
Hey, man, how's it going? It is Monday night. Great night.
It is a great night. It's going great, man. For those of you that are tuning in to listen to my special guest I had lined up, apparently something has come up, and he has not been able to join us this evening. However, I assure you, I'm going to do everything within my power to make that situation right. So, but we do have a whole list of new topics we can talk about, including the hurricane that's about to come and say hello to us over here on the east coast of Florida. We've got the Kayak Awards, Kayak Angler Awards that we can discuss this evening. Some fishing reports for the week leading up to this storm coming here. I've got some really good information to throw out to you guys on different techniques and tactics and things to do right before the storm comes, and then also too afterwards. We should have a full slate of things to discuss. Did you do any fishing over this weekend, Chip?
Nah, man, it's too hot. we did some scooter riding, get the wind blowing in our hair and stuff, but no, it was just too difficult to try to make it happen up here. And then we had some big thunderstorms and stuff, so I'm waiting. Labor Day weekend, I'm headed south, going to Panama City. Me and the clone are going to tear them up with the Panama City Kayak Fishing Association down there, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome trip, man. You're fishing with Linda Cabot down there, aren't you?
That's it, yep. Captain Linda Cabot. We're going to get with her. We're going to stop in at Sunjammers, maybe do a couple of interviews there and give out some stickers and just have a good time.
Good deal, good deal. Yeah, that's the other Fish Like a Girl kayak guide for the state of Florida. I'll tell you what, between her and Dee, I don't think any of us guys really have a shot in heck of beating that tag team. But so we've got a storm that's heading up this way. For those of you over here on the east coast of Florida, it looks like it's going to probably make its way past us on, I believe, Thursday late night, Friday morning, something like that. Could be a Category 3. It's kind of nasty. And we're not on the best of sides to be on for this thing to go by. They're talking about it maybe passing by us about 100 and some odd nautical miles off the coast, which would put it a little bit between us and the Bahamas. And being that far off with a Category 3, we're going to definitely get some serious wind and some rain from it. But it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. We went to Publix this evening, me and my wife and the kids, and we were stocking up on some essentials just in case. And it was amazing to see how many people were buying cases of water and batteries and flashlights and all the essentials that you normally would want to gather up pre-hurricane season. So it's good to see people are actually taking this storm kind of seriously. It looks like it might come up there towards you guys in Georgia a little bit, too. It looks like it might kind of skirt the southeast, as these things tend to do. You guys, are you anywhere near the coast, Chip?
No, we're 4 hours from the nearest coastline here, and at least 4 hours. So, but we'll probably get some bands off of it if it comes close enough. It's supposed to be, they're talking it might be a Category 5 as it comes past us. So that's a big hurricane, man.
Yeah, that's a big hurricane, and my brother lives up there in North Carolina, so I'm hoping this thing decides to catch the Gulf Stream and ride it on up past him and stay away from those guys, because he's right there on the beach. But so that was interesting. I got my 3 cases of water that were on a really good deal from Publix, and a bunch of like ramen noodles and the old standby essentials. So
good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're pretty prepared here at the Levi House. I'm going to bust out the storm shutters here in another couple of days, depending upon what this thing does. Still got a ways to go. So, like as we saw, the last one went over Cuba and all that and kind of dissipated into nothing but more than just a thunderstorm. This one looks like it's going to stay on open water a little bit longer. So I don't think we'll be quite as lucky, but you know, there's no need to rush and get the shutters up. I don't like to live in a cave unless I have to. So, but the fishing leading up to it is actually really, really good. And for those of you that have never fished right before a big storm like that, the barometric pressure just starts fluctuating like crazy right as it's coming. So those fish kind of know it's time to feed now, because we probably won't get to feed for a couple of days during the storm or right after the storm. So before the winds get here, before it gets too treacherous to get out there on the water, I don't suggest anybody going out there surfing the intercoastal, but get out there and put a line in the water. You know, those fish will be feeding well. So, and as I saw last week with D down in the south end of the county, the topwater trout bite has been good, is still good, continues to be good. You know, it's not even that far south. Here in Titusville, my buddy was fishing yesterday. Get this, caught a 34-inch trout. That's a giant, man. A 34-inch trout on topwater. He showed me a picture of it. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. So an absolute stud.
It didn't
stud.
Have four legs, though, did it? I
mean, no, it didn't have four legs. It was definitely the right color. It was silver with little black spots and a big old yellow mouth and big buck teeth. So, yeah, it was definitely the right variety of gator trout. So, but I'll tell you, I didn't get to fish this weekend. I wanted to, but we had a wedding to go to. And I'd like to say congratulations real quick to my buddy Dalton and his beautiful wife, Crystal, for putting on an amazing wedding and a beautiful ceremony. And we just hope that you guys have many, many years ahead of you of happiness and fishing and hunting excursions. Now, that's something that something we rarely ever talk about on Kayak Fishing Radio is do we take our significant others fishing with us? Or do they care? And this particular couple, they hunt together, they fish together, and it was even said during their during one of the speeches at the reception that she outfishes and outhunts him. So it was pretty funny. Do you ever fish with Miss Gibson?
Yeah, man, she joined us on the trip to Cedar Key, and she was out there with her. The mad super dog, little Jack Russell, we call Snapper. She was out there just, she caught a red and a trout, I think. So she fishes. She'd rather ride her scooter, but she can fish.
Nice. Yeah, my wife actually. I think I told the story once before. I fell in love with her, probably her second or third date, man. I took her fishing, and we went flounder fishing, and she absolutely put the whooping to me. And I think she caught her limit of flounder in less than an hour, and every one of them was just a stud. And I showed her how to jig for them off the jetty, and she figured it out, and she was doing it. And by the time the day was almost over, she was netting her own flounder, and you know, she was all excited. We got back to my parents' house to show them what we caught, and she's laying them out on the tailgate of the truck. So yeah, she definitely loves to be on and around the water. We were talking about that this evening too. That once the storm rolls through and kind of shakes things up a little bit in the river, we're definitely going to have to get her back out there again. After having the kids, it's been kind of tough. So, but yeah, so let's talk about the 600 plus ballots that have been voted on for the kayak fishing, or I can never remember exactly what it's called, Chip. I'm sorry.
Angler's Choice Award.
That's what it is. The Kayak Angler's
That's
Choice
it.
Awards.
That's right.
That's pretty impressive.
It took me a while to figure that one out. Me and Mark went back and forth quite a few times before we got it figured out. But, we're hosting it in conjunction with the friends at yakangler.com. And I see Yak Angler Adam is in there in the chat room. So, some interesting stuff, and if you're listening to the podcast or if you're listening as a guest or tuning in over the week here to figure out what's going on, because I know a lot of people from the responses, a lot of people didn't hear about it initially, but we had the nominations open for a little over, it was about 10 weeks that we had nominations open. The folks here at Kayak Fishing Radio and the folks at YakAngler.com, we had no input whatsoever as to who was going to be on the ballots. All we did was act as the collectors and put it up. And I appreciate all the great responses and the folks that are answering question number 9, which is, hey, how can we do it better next year? But just to clear up some of the questions, you know, they're like saying, hey, how come these guys aren't listed as the Kayak Angler of the Year or the Kayak Angling Guide of the Year? Well, it's because they didn't get nominated. We specifically took ourselves out. So even though we may have known someone, we couldn't nominate and we can't vote. We wanted to make sure that it's square, you know, square up, that we're not trying to tell anybody that, you know, it's not really a, I mean, it is a popularity contest. I mean, people see your name and they vote for you, right? That's why we had to take you out, Chuck, because so many people would have voted for you.
Yeah, right.
But so that's how it came about. Was we just said, hey, let's ask folks who they think are the best ones, and then as part of it, we talked about it, and it was like we didn't really want to just put somebody's name up there, and actually when I sent out emails to everybody who was nominated for either the Kayak Angler of the Year or as the Kayak Guide of the Year, and I told them what it was about. Guys like Jim Sammons and Oost and all of those folks, they should have got an email, and they responded to me and said, yeah, sure, that sounds fun, I'm in. If I didn't get a response from them, or they called me back, and I actually got a couple of responses from folks who said, hey, thanks a lot, but, you know, like, there were a couple of people who were nominated as guides, and they said, I just take people fishing. I'm not a guide. I'm not, you know, they had their own reasons, and they withdrew their name from it. So I thought that was pretty respectable. So that's how the people got on the ballot. And
yeah,
we've got a bunch
sorry.
Of folks. No, that's cool. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I looked over the ballot and just kind of see what was all on there, just out of curiosity. And, man, there's some pretty good stuff on there. There's some pretty, popular fishermen that I know that aren't from this area that are on there. Some of the companies that are listed are really good companies. I was surprised a few of them weren't nominated. A few more kayak manufacturers weren't nominated than what were, but, yeah, it's a very cool thing. I think that it's only going to grow. I think next year it'll be absolutely incredible. I think the list of potential winners are going to be, you know, probably 10 times what it was this year, just because more people know about it.
Right. And for folks that are listening and want to vote, even if there's a other, right, there's a write-in blank. So write in if your special product or something like that is not listed, because there are some people saying, oh, you're not listed in this kayak, or you don't have this kayak, or you don't have this product. Well, that's where the write-ins are. We did not put write-ins in the guide or the angler awards because, like I said, I wanted them to make sure that they wanted to play. I thought that was the only – that was the right thing to do, that we were going to – you know, because I need to ask them if they were cool with us using their name and that kind of stuff. Products and stuff like that, we do reviews on all that kind of stuff, and we don't ask permission for that. We just – these are independent, non-solicited, and we just wanted to see what people were at. I'm going to wait until Thursday to talk about the leaderboard as far as the guide and the angler. But, Chuck, I will give you a choice, and we will talk about a leaderboard in one of the other categories. So for your show, we can talk about one of the leaderboards on either, like, the kayak or the product or the let's see, what was the other one? We had the Forum of the Year. We had Fishing Journal or Magazine of the Year.
Let's talk about the
most innovative product.
Let's talk about the product.
The product? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right, let me go back to most innovative product of the year. Okay. Yeah. Adam said it's good that he wasn't nominated as guide of the year.
Yeah.
All right. So let me pull up the the other responses here, because we do have a few. So 522 people have answered the question, and some of the things that were nominated were boomerang pliers and snapshot ruler and silent traction system and stuff like that. Some of the things that have been written in, okay, so it says innovative product of the year, and we got a couple of them that were like, you know, like the Mirage Drive, someone wrote in the Native Mariner Propel, the Mighty Mount, and Yak Attack is getting a lot of nominations, or actually not nominations, but votes. But the way it goes, I'll look at the chart and we'll look at the top 10 here. So right now, in first place with over 120 votes is the Yak Attack Visi Carbon Pro as the most innovative product of the year.
And it's a great product.
It is. It really is. And coming in second, by not too far, with over 100 votes, is the Fish Grip. And with over 80 votes, the Hobie Mirage Drive is in third place. So Yak Attack Visi Carbon Pro, the Fish Grip, and Hobie Mirage Drive are all in there. Like I said, if your idea for the most innovative product of the year didn't get in there, write it in and tell your friends to write it in. But these are the responses we got, and that's what we put up. So we'll do it again next year. It's, and the prize is basically a certificate and bragging rights for the year until we do it again, and then someone else gets the 2012 bragging rights. But it was pretty much in good sport, and we just wanted to see what people were thinking out there. So Chuck, you got the first leaderboard up as the Yak Attack Visi Carbon Pro leading, the Fish Grip in second, the Hobie Mirage Drive in third. You want to know fourth?
Sure.
Hummingbird transducer mounts.
Wow.
You know, like the ones that go into the scupper plugs and stuff.
Right, right. That's pretty cool.
And then trailing real close is the Mod Pod for the Trident kayaks, which that's a pretty neat one. So that's your top five on the leaderboard for most innovative product of the year. And there's some other ones coming up close. So keep an eye on it. So that's our update, and we will talk about the leaderboard for Guide and Angler of the Year on Thursday's show.
So get out there and vote. Vote, vote, vote.
Right. We like everybody can vote once a day. You know, I mean, so far I've been watching it. We've got over 600 votes, and just about all of them are individual singular IP addresses. So nobody's sitting there putting in, you know, 100 responses. I see a couple of doubles in there, but that's just folks voting on a different day, and that's cool. So, but it's cool, and I appreciate all the responses that folks have come in. I mean, I'll shut up for a minute and let you talk, man.
No, hey, listen, buddy. I'll never complain whenever somebody else is on here helping me out, run some time through the show. It's okay. I actually got a caller on the line. This is my buddy Scott from here in Brevard County. Scott, you there?
I'm here.
Tell me fish story, man. Did you go fishing?
I didn't. But I went to Fort Pierce last Monday.
And, you can tell us about that. That's fun.
Yeah, water was pretty clear. Did some diving. Didn't really see much on the big side, but saw a bunch of little lobster. Went down. Saw one little hogfish, and that was about it.
At least you got out on the water, man. That's important.
That's right. I think I'm thinking about going down into Satellite tomorrow, do some topwater fishing before it gets too hot. See what happens down there.
Now, are you planning on fishing leading up to the storms coming through, or the storm coming through?
Yes. Oh yeah, most definitely. hopefully and, that low pressure will get the fish moving or something.
Well, you know what I'm hoping for, bud. I'm hoping that we have another Faye type event where the thing decides to park on us for a couple days.
Yes.
And,
and
those locks get messed up.
Push the locks open again.
Now, for those of you that don't or have never heard the story, the most amazing, epic fishing week of all time ever. Chip, our fishing excursion to the lagoon, which it was awesome. Between seven of us, we caught over 200 redfish. That was a great time. This is just incredible. Scott, throw out some numbers of the numbers of fish that you caught in a week's time.
Well, in the week of time or just the main day?
The main day is fine.
Main day's time. Got up early. We were going to go fish the bombing targets just to mess around. And then we're like, well, let's go get some ladyfish from the locks because, you know, they're always sitting there on the lock. Pulled up. Locks are busted open and current was running through there at about 11 knots. Sat there First cast, three different people. That was our inshore slam. Just first three casts. Trout, redfish, snook, dumb. And throughout the day, we left by 11. I think we started counting after, I don't know, probably got 80 redfish, got 15, 20 snook, jumped a couple big, pretty nice-sized tarpon, got three or four black drum, flounder, probably 15 trout. Just sitting right on the locks in between the end of Ski Island Point right there and the rocks, and catching them on whatever you want to throw. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I know there was several different groups that had fished out that way, different boats, I should say, that had fished the locks leading up to and afterwards of the storm moving through. I didn't have the opportunity to really fish it in a boat so much. I was actually able to stand on the seawall inside the port and mess the flounder population up really bad as they were moving through for, I think it was at least 5 days in a row on my lunch break from work. I took a dozen live shrimp down with me. It became a game. I took a dozen live shrimp down there with me to see if I can catch my limit of flounder. Yeah. And so every day for 4 days I did that, and every day I got my limit. It was crazy. I've never seen the port. I never seen the fishery in the port that good, or anywhere for that matter, anywhere near us. You know, it was like fishing Sebastian Inlet. If you can take all the fish in Sebastian down there in Sebastian Inlet and put them in a bucket and not feed them for three weeks, it was kind of what it was like. But
it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not hoping.
Mention the culvert fishing after that storm for the next 4 weeks we fished them, Chuck?
Yeah. It was just absolutely incredible. And that's one thing I was going to lead into with tonight's discussion was fishing those culverts. I got an email from a listener, nameless. I cannot remember his name to save my life. But he had asked, you always speak about fishing culverts, whether I'm on my show or on Rob's show, after rainstorms, and how do you go about targeting fish at a culvert pipe? Well, I see what Don Mario put in there. It's good. The way that I like to approach the culvert pipes is, for me in the kayak, it's a lot different than the way me and you would fish them, Scott, because you're in the flats boat, but you've kayak fished with me before. When I approach the culverts, I like to get parallel with the shoreline and throw across the culvert pipe, which is kind of what you'd still want to do in a boat situation if you have enough water. Typically, you don't, but at certain culverts, you do. And then I like to use something rather large to where I can really get the fish's attention. Throw it right next to that culvert pipe, right where the water's washing out. Leave the bail open. Just let it kind of get swept through. Don't jerk it. Don't twitch it. Don't do nothing to it. Just let it fall through that current. And a lot of times, big giant trout, big hungry redfish, black drum, snook, tarpon, everything will just be laying there waiting to ambush whatever comes through. So with this rain event coming, the mosquito control areas north of Cocoa up in Titusville area, The area just outside of Pine Island, right out front of Pine Island, for those of you that fish the Port St. John area over here in the east coast of Florida. That creek that runs through Pine Island will be flowing out into the river. Where's some other good spots without, you know, throwing out everybody else?
Anywhere north.
Go ahead,
I mean, you have that one spot by Pine Island, and then you have just anywhere north of the 405. Just find your culvert pipe, and they run all the way up to the end of the Indian River.
Yeah, they really do. There's
flowing culvert pipe, and like Chuck said, just throw your gulp shrimp in there or whatever, and just get it as close as you can in that current, and then just leave your bail open and let it swim out or fall out in the current, and you'll see your line come tight, go the opposite direction. And 99% of the time, that's your fish.
Yeah, Scott's, as I said earlier, is a really good friend of mine. I fish with him quite a bit. He is one of those who I'm trying to convert into a kayak fisherman from a boat fisherman. I don't think it's going to happen, but he's enjoyed the kayak fishing with me a couple of times. I think he sees the benefit of it for sure. I'll tell you what I can't wait to do. I can't wait to go back to that spot where we fished during the wintertime.
Are you talking about up in the Sawgrass?
Yeah, man. That's going to be good. That's going to be for another show, and it's probably going to be a good couple of months away before we get those kind of temperatures and that kind of water condition to push those fish in there. But I think I'll have to do a live show from the water one evening, fishing the spillways or something like that. Just to kind of get people a little bit excited about it. But let's see what's going on in the chat room real quick. Dom, my brother, says that he's got good authority that Jackson Cuda is the next big thing, maybe 2012 ballot. Yeah, well, I've heard of said tale of this boat being the next best thing. And actually, Isaac, one of our other kayak fishing radio hosts, did a really good interview, as he always does, for yakangler.com on the Jackson line of boats at the Outdoor Retailer Show. And there's a small little snippet video that you can go to yakangler.com on the main page. On the right-hand side, you'll see a little scroll down. Go down to, you'll see the little smiley face for Jackson Kayak. Click on it and read the full story. And once you do that, it'll allow you to watch this little video, and it kind of goes over the details of the new Cuda, which is pretty spiffy to say the least. I don't get excited over kayaks very easily, and this is one of those that it's got my name written all over it. It looks like it was built and designed the way that I would want to build and design a kayak for my style of fishing, which is standing 95% of the time. So. Definitely something to check out. I'd be interested to see if it makes the ballot next year. But Adam says he's using acoustic.
Right?
Yeah, it's the boat I showed you the other day, the videos of that Jackson Cuda. Unfortunately, it's not going to be released until, I think, October, maybe November. And then another video says November, December. So I don't know, man. It's going to be like, for me, it's going to be a mad rush to go get one as soon as they're going to be available. Much like kids around Christmas time trying to get a PS3 or something. So, but it's funny, man, how the sport has really has kind of developed into, I don't know, the standing thing. Yeah. But I think that the kayak manufacturers are just, I don't know how they still have things that they can do to these boats, because they've already done so much to them to make them as fisherman friendly as they have. But like some of them, I was looking even at the Malibu line of boats for a buddy of mine's looking for a tandem for his family. And the Malibu tandem looks like a really nice boat, and they really thought it out well. So, you know, it's neat to see the progression of how things have come along from, say, even 5 years ago, you know, when flush mount rod holders were always the norm. Now you're starting to see some kayak manufacturers not putting any rod holders on their kayaks at all, because there's so much call for the Scotty style pivot mounted rod holders. So yeah, it's definitely pretty cool. pretty interesting. Chip, did you get a chance to take a look at that CUDA?
Yeah, I did, and we've been going back and forth on it. It's like, you know, I thought that my perfect plastic Navy was going to be an Outback and an Ultimate 14.5, and that's all I needed. But now I see that CUDA, and that's a pretty cool looking boat.
I'll tell you, I don't know if you guys have seen it, because it's not on Yak Angler. I'm going to have to post it on Yak Angler. Believe it or not, Adam, I'll actually do that. There's a video on Jackson's website. If you go to the Jackson Kayak website, go to their fishing kayaks and go down, scroll down until you see the CUDA. Click on it, and once it brings it up on the full page, there's a series of three videos on the one side. One of the guys from Jackson is sitting in the CUDA, and he stands up, and then he proceeds to walk all the way up to the bow of the CUDA, standing like on the hatch on the bow of the CUDA, and paddles it around in a circle real quick, and then turns around and walks back and sits back down again. And that's crazy stability right there, man. To me, it just looks like it's going to be the answer. So, but enough about that. Take a look at it, guys.
Did you see the guy that was fly fishing off of it?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just whipping that buggy whip and looked pretty cool.
Well, and that's the other thing, man, is you guys know that I like to fly fish, and I can fly fish out of my current boats. So I don't have a problem with that, but I have to definitely be very, very careful on how hard I try to push that line past me, because I do like to rock the boat a little bit, and it can get a little hairy. This thing just looks so stable. I mean, that's all I got to say about it. I haven't been in one. I haven't even laid my eyes on one in person, besides just on the screen and watched the videos and stuff. And I talked to Isaac a little bit via chat, and you know, he was pretty pumped on the boat. He thought it looked really cool and stuff. So I'll be interested to see how stiff the floor is. That, to me, is everything when it comes to these stand-up style kayaks, is how stiff the floor actually is. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, if you've ever tried to stand in a kayak and the floor feels soft, to me, that's not necessarily a good thing. I don't want the floor to flex when I'm trying to throw a fly, because it just kind of creates this bouncing effect in the boat, and it's just not good. Plus, they're all made of plastic, and at the end of the day, if you sat there and wore on plastic up and down, you know, kept pushing up and down on a piece of plastic long enough, to me, it should end up cracking. So it's, I don't know. That's going to be probably the make it or break it deal for me, is once I finally get my hands on one, put it in the water, jump up on it, and see how it flexes, you know. But got another caller on the line from 304. Welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio.
Thank you.
And we have Kayla on the line.
Mm-hmm. Hello, how are you?
Good. Have you fished this weekend at all, Kayla?
I did some trout fishing a couple of days ago and caught a couple of trout. I was in a small stream, just kind of messing around with my fly rod. Caught a couple trout. But that's been about it for my week. It was very exciting, though.
Well, tell us about it. I mean, what was exciting about it? I mean, you're talking to a mainly a saltwater crew here, so you
exactly.
Got to, like,
that's
make
why
it exciting.
I don't know what... It's exciting for me, but I feel stupid because you're catching huge redfish, and I'm pumped about a 3-ounce trout.
Hang on, I got a story for you, and you're gonna appreciate this. I went, okay. Me and my wife, and my in-laws, and my sister-in-law, and her husband and kids went on a vacation a couple years ago. We went up to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and mm-hmm. as we're rolling through Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I noticed that there's this stream that runs parallel with the road. And I'm like, wow, that stream looks like it probably would have some trout in it. And everybody in the vehicle just kind of like looked at each other. And I'm like, what? Don't tell me that you guys brought me up here and there's trout in the stream and nobody decided to tell me to bring a fly rod or a rod. So, whatever. We get to our little lodge. My first question is, hey, that stream down there, is there trout in it? Yep. Where's the closest Walmart? So, to the chagrin of my wife, I think, I went and found a Walmart, bought a little ultralight combo, went down on our vacation, mind you, and did some fishing and ended up catching a rather small rainbow trout. And it didn't matter the size of the fish. I was just really, really excited about catching this rainbow trout. So I'm yelling for my wife to come over and take a picture. Like, come here, you got to take a picture of this trout. She's like, why are you so happy about catching a little tiny fish? You troll with fish bigger than that for bait. I'm like, you don't understand. It's a rainbow trout. It's amazing. I guarantee you the fish wasn't even 10 inches long. But it was one of the coolest fish I'd ever caught. So I understand being excited about catching little fish. I give you a hard time from time to time on the shows about it. But it's all in good fun. But
right. And I totally agree. What?
You guys are past me. I've never caught any freshwater trout.
It's amazing. Every fish I catch, like, I'm serious, like a little kid about it. Even if it's a 5-inch bluegill, like, I'm freaking pumped because I like the fight of it, and it's kind of like some kind of thrill for me, just like taking this fish out of its environment and like bringing it into mine, like some kind of high I get off of it, I guess. But I was just like you, I would do the same thing, like pulling off the side of the road because I know that looks like a trout stream over there. And I carry one of my fly rods in the back of my vehicle all the time because I live in West Virginia. So it happens all the time. And I had just tied this fly that, like, I wasn't necessarily trying to mimic anything, but I think probably would have looked like a mosquito with extra, like, little black stuff on it. And so it was kind of like my version of a jig for, as a fly. And I just wanted to go throw it in a stream somewhere and see if I could catch something. And I was actually thinking, like, maybe some creek chub to take catfishing. But I realized that it was probably a pretty nice little brook to have some trout in it, and ended up with my brand new little fly that I was just messing around with. I caught two, like, smaller size trout, but that were probably like 5-6 inches long and normal, I guess. But the thing of it is, it's like trout in West Virginia right now to be like in a stream that's not stocked regularly, it's pretty neat to actually catch one on the fly rod. Like,
yeah, catching native fish. I understand. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's cool. Very cool. Well, I'm glad that you were able to get out and get some fish. That's what it's all about. Now, you didn't do
Thank
that
you.
In kayak,
Me too.
Though, did you?
No, I didn't. But I did, like, I was walking along this stream, and I like, the history about it and the whole nature thing and everything. And just, like, walking after I caught these fish because it's neat to me. And it opens up into prime kayaking territory. Like, unbelievable. I can't wait to do a float trip, and guaranteed muskies are gonna be there, so I can't wait to be able to tell you about that adventure.
Cool. Yeah, I look forward to hearing about that adventure, and hopefully you can get with somebody that's up there that's a kayak fisher person or just a friend of yours that has been kayak fishing and get them involved in that trip. That sounds like it would be a great trip. Maybe you should do some videoing when you get a muskie out of the kayak. That's pretty cool. But,
yeah.
So what else can we talk about here? We've talked about the storm coming. We've talked about culvert pipe fishing. Talked about fishing outside the locks there near Port Canaveral. I'll tell you what. The other day I was at work in Port Canaveral at the tackle shop, and a couple of guys went by with Hobies, and they had sails. I could see the sails were laid down in the bed of the truck, but I have seen a tremendous amount of those Hobies with the sails on them fishing inside the fort in the last couple of weeks. I don't know if that's just something that's done here or if that's everywhere, but kind of crazy. I don't really know how I would feel about a sail being in my way when I'm fishing, but have you guys ever seen any of that? Answer?
I've never seen that. I didn't know if you're like referring to me or if everybody else lives by you, but I've never seen that. Were they fishing or were they just kayaking?
No, they were fishing. There's nowhere to really go. There's nowhere to really go in the port and like sightsee, really. I mean, you're pretty much just.
Some people do it for fitness.
Yeah, no, you're not fitness nothing in the port. It's almost scary to be out in the port in a kayak at times. So, yeah, it's like the last place you'd want to go for fitness. I mean, I don't know. Yak Angler Adam says Pam and Gina both have sails in their kayaks. Does it work pretty well for them, apparently? I mean, if they use them, I guess it does. I don't know. Interesting. You know where it would probably be good would be for the No Motor Zone that I have here. You know, I think that if you were to launch and just set sail and let the wind do all of the work, then your way back wouldn't be too bad. Lots of fishing would be tough.
That's
yeah, it would be.
Very convenient. Like, you don't even have to paddle it.
Go ahead, Scott.
If you're lucky enough to get some wind.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, certain times of year it'd be really tough, but I don't know. That's interesting. Are Hobie the only guys that do the sails? I don't know if anybody else has a kayak that has sails on them. I've never seen it before. I mean, I don't know.
There was a product that was out about a year ago that was like, it was along the same lines of, I've got a golf umbrella in my crate, you know, and I just open it up. But it was serious. It had like a little plastic area. You just kind of held it with your hands, and it pulled you along. You had to run with the wind. You couldn't tack towards it like you can in a real sailboat. But
yeah, well, that's what I was just thinking too. What Hammerhead's talking about, guys going offshore with them, with sails on them. That actually isn't a bad idea. I bet you, with the right breeze, you could probably get a kayak moving pretty good at a pretty good clip with a sail on it. And if you control, say, a ballyhoo, you know, in kingfish territory at like 6-7 knots out of a kayak, that'd be pretty interesting. Cool.
See Chuck at 90 miles offshore in his kayak.
With a sail on it. Yeah, you guys will see me on National Geographic or one of those I Survive shows where I grew out the Yeti beard. Yeah, right, I shouldn't be alive. I survived off a flying fish that hit me at night and beef jerky and rainwater. Something crazy.
On the kayaks off the beach, I have seen the times that I've been back down south chasing the tarpon off the beach the past couple of weeks, I have seen a lot more kayaks this year out there fishing them than I have, say, last year. It's pretty funny because you're running along and you don't even really see them until you're almost on top of them when they dip in and out of the waves. So
that's a good reason to go out and buy themselves a Yak Attack Visipole, so that they've got something that's above their head kind of bobbing around, orange flag kind of whipping around, to kind of give them some sort of you know, give other boaters some sort of heads up knowing that they're there. That's always been my big concern. I don't have a yak attack visible, but my big concern is always about getting run over, and it's one of the reasons why I don't do more of the beach fishing than what I do now, is when I know guys are out there running all over God's creation out there trying to find tarpon and stuff. It's a little scary to me. I like to fish from the kayak off the beach the first bit of the run, when there's maybe if just a few boats as opposed to
right. It's scary out there in my little flats boat. Some of those guys buzzing around in 35-foot center consoles and
like cobia season.
Yes.
But
I think it might be yak attack that I got my light thing from, and it's like solar powered, and it has a red or orange flag on it, and I have to have it like when I'm on my boat at nighttime to where other boaters can see me. Is that the same thing?
I think
you know
so.
What I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean they make a couple. I think they make a couple of them, but yeah, it's I haven't really looked at the different products that they have, to be honest with you, because I'm not in the market for it just at this moment. So Chip, maybe he can weigh in on that. I think Chip's got one. I know the clone's got one.
Yeah, we got the old version of the X-Tac Pro poles, but yeah, I like having it on the clone's boat so I can see where he's at. You know, I can pick him up quicker. But you have to have a white light that's visible 360 degrees when you're on the water at night in any vessel. So even a kayak, canoe, whatever, you got to have a white light visible 360 degrees. As long as you're not over 16 feet, you don't need the navigation lights, just the white light.
Right. So yeah, actually, I had Aaron build me a couple of really cool homemade jobbies with some dive lights and PVC that work real well. They fit right into the Scotty bases. So, and it's 360 degree white light. It's LEDs, so brighter than the sun. And I was actually thinking about running, it sounds kind of crazy, but for fishing in the port, doing as much of it as I do, I was actually thinking about running a little red LED and a little green LED up towards the nose of the kayak. I don't think it would be too much to do that, you know, and just have a little bit more visibility, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's thinking a little bit too crazy, but I don't know. The one light behind my shoulder and a headlamp that I have on my head would probably be, you know, sufficient for what I'm going to do. I don't know. Something to think about. So, Scott, when are you going to buy a kayak?
I did have a little interview with Grills today, so we'll see how that goes, and I'll probably end up getting one, and we can use my boat as, say, a tender boat, get us to where we want to go, and anchor it up and go farther than my boat can go.
Nice. Mothership trips, courtesy of Scott Rawson.
That's
right. You guys heard it here on Kayak Fishing Radio.
So cool.
Chip, next time you come down, there you go. We got a boat, a flats boat that we can throw some kayaks on.
Yeah. I see Aaron's in the chat room now.
Yeah. Welcome back,
yeah.
Aaron.
Yeah.
I was hoping he was going to give me a call. Shell Seeker, that's a new one for me.
Yeah, and CTLSR. I don't know who they are.
That's my dad.
Welcome aboard. Oh, that's your dad?
Yeah.
Cool.
Pops is checking in, listening in on his young prodigy.
Pop Levi.
There
cool.
You go.
You know, I'm totally jonesing after I saw those guys down in Chokoloski with that 27-foot Carolina skiff. Had six boats in the bow of it, you know, and then a couple of big 110-gallon coolers with seats on top of it. It was a great mothership.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely jonesing myself. In fact, my buddy Jimmy called me yesterday and asked if I'd be able to get off and go do some fishing tomorrow offshore, and that's something he's been wanting to do is throw my kayak in his boat and take me out to the reefs and wrecks offshore and let me have my way with some rare and endangered red snappers for points for kayak wars.
Oh, boy. The amount of those that are out there right now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
They're closed right now, right?
They're closed forever. They're closed forever,
they
man.
They said they were going to open them back up. They were going to open them back up in 12. Actually, I saw Linda Cavett put something up. Said that they could possibly open them up this fall for a special season.
Is that now? Is that on her coast or is that on my coast?
Because it was on one of the posts.
Because on her coast, the rules and regulations are completely different for red snapper. Over here, I haven't heard anybody say anything other than 35 years, Scott?
Yeah, it's closed basically for too long or longer than it should be.
That's right, you guys spot them all.
Yeah, right, that's just it. There's actually a really cool video if you guys go to floridasportsman.com and go on the East Central Florida fishing section and scroll down and said there's a little like a red angry face on somebody's post. If you click that and go into that guy's post, he's got a video that he did where him and his son and one of our other friends, Eric, were out fishing. And you see his son swim down with a net full of bait and just kind of throw him out of the net about 20, 30 feet down. And there's just a wad of these giant red snappers. So it's pretty cool footage. It's making a lot.
And that was just on scallop.
Yeah, this is scallop bed. There's no hard bottom there or anything. It's just a bunch of scallops just hanging out on the bottom in the sand. So it's getting a lot of people aggravated over here on our coast about this red snapper closure, but not going to get into that. That's not what I'm about. I don't want to make my show a political platform, but I definitely want to get out there and put some holes in their face anyway. There's nothing that says I can't catch them. They just say I can't keep them. So, you know, I'll catch them, I'll vent them and throw them back and watch them bob up and down on the surface. It's just the way it is. But, yeah, so that's something I want to do, though, is do some of those mothership trips. And I know I talked about it previously on the show that I've got two or three of my buddies that are offshore charter guys that have already committed to saying that if anybody should want to go out and do one of those trips, that they'd be more than happy to accommodate the kayaks for those trips. And they wouldn't charge you any more than just a normal fishing trip. So something to think about. Yep, for sure. But
definitely be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's something different to do. Like I say, we're not blessed with the shoreline that they are down in South Florida, to where they can just paddle out off the coast and over in parts of the Panhandle where they can just paddle out off the beach and start catching really nice bottom fish. We have to go a little bit further than that, starting about 15 to 20 miles off the coast. So definitely a little bit past the paddling at the realm of possibilities for a paddle craft. So jumping in a mothership to do those trips is definitely the way to do it. But, you know, I think there's enough.
Is there
Go ahead.
Are there any regulations? I mean, Scott, are you a guide or are you a captain?
I'm working on getting my captain's license as we speak, actually.
I wonder, are there any regs about strapping kayaks onto your boat?
No. The only thing for the mothership trips is that the only concern those guys have had is whether or not their insurance is going to cover the liability of them having kayaks out off the beach. And I mean, a guy can stroke out and fall out in the back of the boat just as easy as he could fall off a kayak and drown, I guess. But if you're going to go out and you're going to do that kind of trip, and I already explained to those guys, it's one of those that you don't allow people to just get on board with a kayak and a paddle and a rod with no life vests, no safety equipment, no nothing. I mean, they have to go off the back of the boat wearing a PFD and make sure that they're at least somewhat experienced. You know, you can't listen. I don't ever want. I'm not going to try. I probably shouldn't even try and publicize these trips because I don't want a guy who just bought a kayak who's never offshore fished a day in his life to go out there and drop a jig down and try and catch an amberjack. It's not a good idea, you know. And that's a fish that'll pull you out of a kayak in a second. So it's definitely something to think about before you book a trip like that is to whether or not A, you've got the right gear to do it, or B, you've got the right safety equipment on your kayak to do it. And, you know, it's definitely a risky endeavor. And that's one of the things that makes it so cool that those guys down in South Florida do it on a regular basis is that they're actually in the Gulf Stream, which just blows my mind that they do that stuff down there in the Gulf Stream. Cause I know what the Gulf Stream can get like in a hurry, and they're down there in kayaks paddling around, catching tunas and all kinds of stuff. So I saw a guy down there caught a Warsaw grouper, like a 40 or 50 pound Warsaw grouper out of a kayak. That's absolutely incredible. Like Chip, I know you've caught groupers before, Chip. That's nuts to catch a 50 pound grouper out of a kayak. I mean, that's a feat all in amongst itself.
That will hurt
you. Out of Miami, don't they run a mothership sailfish tournament down there where they take out kayaks, or you have to build your own little raft and catch a sailfish out of it?
Yeah, they did that a couple years ago. I don't know if they're still doing it every year. It was actually pretty cool, and I'm surprised more kayakers weren't really involved with it because it seemed like it was just a floating kind of a deal. There was dudes
you could use anything you wanted, you could build
whatever it was as long as it floated, and some of the contraptions that were made didn't float for very long. I saw the one team that I think won 2 years in a row or whatever like that, they had a huge inner tube, and they put a fighting chair on a piece of wood, like mounted underneath the inner tube, so that the foot of the fighting chair was below the top level of the inner tube, and they had like rod holders off it, and they had like all kinds of crazy. The guy's flying two kites at the same time with baits flying around.
It seemed like you had like 27 rod holders on that thing too. Crazy.
Hold on, let me see what I got going on here in the chat room. I got Shell Seeker asked or said, I have a Hobie kayak fishing ready, but I haven't cast from it yet. What is this? One thing you would have done different to your first kayak fishing trip. On my first kayak fishing trip. Well, first of all, again, welcome. I appreciate you coming on to the show. The first thing that I would do that I would have done differently on my first kayak trip, probably would have been to just take my time and really kind of soak up what was going on around me. I kind of got out there guns blazing because I've been fishing my entire life. So it's one of those things that I had an idea of what I wanted to go do. I wanted to go look for tail and redfish, this, that, and the other. I think the most important thing is to get to pull up Google Earth or one of those Bing Maps or whatever, and kind of pick out an area that you really want to try and get to know. When you drop your kayak in the water, have kind of a game plan in mind, and make sure you tell somebody where you're going. See, I didn't do that. I didn't tell anybody where I was going my first trip, and I wasn't gone long, but still, I got back and I got an earful about it. It's definitely something to think about. But and then do. Target a fish that's local to you that you know you can probably catch with ease, just to kind of get your confidence level up a little bit as far as catching fish from the kayak. And then that'll also kind of lend into learning how to handle fish from your kayak, because it's a little bit harder than it sounds. You know, you get a 40-inch redfish next to the boat, and you got to now decide what you're going to do with it. You're going to put it on your lap, you're going to leave it in the water, or, you know, and same thing goes for you know, smaller fish too. I mean, you get a fish with some teeth on it, like a sheephead. I don't want a sheephead flopping around on the deck of my kayak around my feet or around my legs. So it's fish handling, that kind of thing, and double check and make sure that you take everything that you need with you. Because I know I left a tackle tray at home my first trip. I left my scupper plugs at home. That was fun. The first trip, so I came back with a wet butt. I left a whole bunch of stuff just at home that I wanted to bring with me. So she says, or he says, crappie, bass, and gar, Texas. I wouldn't want to pull a gar in the kayak with me at all, but crappie and bass. Yeah, and just figure out what you're going to use the most of and just make sure that you bring it with you all the time. Don't get out the kayak on a windy day. Yeah, don't do that either. My dad found out the hard way. Well, in Texas, you don't have to worry about it if you're fishing in freshwater. My dad didn't listen to me, and I told him to stay in his kayak. He didn't listen. He tried to get out one day and tripped over a submerged log that was covered in barnacles and tore him up. I mean, his legs were just completely shredded open. He's bleeding all over the place like a stuck pig. But that led into kind of a funny situation. We got back to the launch area, and there's like tourists driving by us on the dirt road, and they're staring at my dad because his legs are just covered in blood. And we're talking to each other. It's like, yeah, that gator was awfully big. I can't believe you got away from it. You know, I don't know if they ever heard us saying it, but whatever. But yeah, just those would be the most important things. Make sure you bring your flotation device with you, whether it's a vest or the pocket side pocket style, like I like to wear. The night before, make sure you pack all your tackle, have something to help you land fish in, because it can be a chore sometimes, even if they're crappie and shellfish or shell crackers. It can be it could be sometimes challenging, to say the least. And then sunscreen, lots and lots of liquids. Chip, you got anything to add to that?
I was waiting for my turn.
Sorry.
If I had to do anything different, I did it pretty good. My first trip out, I showed up to an event with the folks at Georgia Kayak Fishing. So I was with a bunch of guys who had been kayak fishing before. We were up at Lake Lanier. But I carried way too much crap with me in the kayak. I had 6 rods. No kidding. It was like I was some kind of, Roland Martin. I had so many rods with me, I just got all tangled up. And that really frustrated the heck out of me. But for your first couple of trips out, just carry one rod that you're very good with. And I would say keep it to probably a spinning rod for the first couple of times if you're normally a bait caster or something, because it's different sitting on the ground. If you're new to kayaking and you're not going to stand up, it's different sitting and casting than it is when you're standing up. So whatever you're comfortable with, I just take one rod for the first couple of trips with me. Keep it simple. Make sure you got a PFD on. There's probably some guys, I'm not sure right off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's some guys on yakangler.com that are from the Texas area. And I would be more than happy to meet you and go out fishing with you. I mean, that's what we all look for, right? Because misery loves company.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point, too. If you're not a member of yakangler.com, be sure to do that at some point. The level of knowledge that floats around on that forum is hard to come by for free. so it's definitely a good source of networking. I know there's a bunch of guys that are hardcore kayakers over in Texas. So most of the ones that I know are over on the coast and fish, trout and redfish, that kind of thing. But, man, Texas. Can you imagine going down to Texas and doing some bass fishing?
Oh, man.
I'm telling you. I've seen videos. I've watched fishing shows. They're fishing in the sticks down there in Texas, and they've got just giant bass. I mean, I know we got big bass here in Florida, but I like freshwater fishing too, even though I give people hard times about it a lot. It's fun to do that for sure every now and again. But let's see what Hammerhead says. Go ahead.
Well, you can say his first.
Oh, I was going to say Hammerhead said, don't reach out for the fish. Bring it to the side of the kayak. Yeah, this is very true, as you will roll over.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I was going to say also. But my best advice would be, like, making sure you do your homework before you take your first fishing trip on a kayak, like going to yakangler.com and reading as much as you can, getting as much information so you know what you need to bring, what you don't need to bring, you don't bring too much stuff. But my Walmart crate or 7-Eleven crate that I had on the back of my kayak for a long time, and everybody thought it was hilarious that I was that cool to have a crate straight from 7-Eleven on the back of my kayak. But I rigged it up to where I made it my own little tackle box for whatever I was going fishing for that day, to where I could just turn around to the back of my boat and I had everything I needed right there, and I wasn't like having to go through everything to find the lure I was looking for. And I have a net, which of course, like you were saying, to make sure you can get the fish no matter what it is, but with the gar that you might not want to pick up in a kayak, I got some like bungee cord and hooked it up to my net and to my kayak with those little clips to where if it would fall in the water, I could get it. And if you hook a gar and get it up to the side of your boat and put it in the net, like, face first, then you can get a hold of his body and not really worry about your net. You can pick it back up in a second, and that way you can get your gar out of the net without having any problems.
That's a good tip. That's a good tip. I got another call.
Thank you.
Hang on a second, Kayla. I got another call on the line from the Daytona area, I believe. 386, you're live on Kayak Fishing Radio. Who do we got? Hello. Area code 386. Are you there? Okie dokie.
All righty.
So, yeah, so that's all good advice. I think that fish handling is definitely important. Making sure you don't take too much stuff with you, but you take enough stuff to get by. That's important as well. See, a Ziploc bag for your phone. Yep, and your wallet. If you don't have a Pelican case or some sort of a waterproof case, that's definitely important. I mean, I know some of the boats have pretty good dry storage, but I don't trust them. I just don't trust the hatches in any of the kayaks anymore. I've lost, or not lost, but damaged goods from water intrusion. So I went out and got a Pelican case, a used Pelican case for like, I think I paid $5 for it actually, which was a pretty good deal. And that's what my wallet, my phone, my car keys, everything goes in there that I'm worried about. My camera even sits in that thing, so it's pretty good. But let's see. You guys have any topics you want to hit on? Anybody in the chat room or Kayla or Scott?
About time for this old guy to go to bed.
Yeah, I was looking at that time clock there. I'm in that mood that I want to just keep on rolling with it. So if anybody's
got anything. Yeah, I have one more question.
Go ahead.
I think for Scott and the tarpon out of the boats lately, how's that working for him? Have you been seeing a lot of tarpons from the kayaks?
I personally fish out of a little flat boat, but I've seen quite a few guys actually catching some tarpon off the beach, right up on the bait pots on the beach.
Oh my gosh! Where's
that?
That,
just out of Satellite Beach, come out of Port Canaveral, or most of them guys will just paddle right off the beach and run down or get out on the bait pods. Actually, 2 weeks ago, I seen a guy hooked up to a pretty decent tarpon, and it was pulling them about a mile offshore, so wouldn't want to have that paddle back in. But still, I think that guy landed that fish, because there's a picture of a guy with a pretty decent tarpon on FloridaSportsman.com. So
I had a guy come by the shop the other day, and he had a little video that he took with his cell phone of him battling the largest tarpon he's ever hooked in his life. And it was probably 130-pound fish. And there's lightning popping all around him. You can see it in the background. The storm clouds are rolling in. This guy's in like this epic battle with this giant tarpon, and finally gets it boat side and puts hands on it and releases it. And, you know, it was a pretty cool little video, man. And it was the guy's first tarpon out of his kayak. And I told him, man, you're done for now. I don't know that you'll ever be able to top that. So, Chip, I see you're getting ready to leave me, buddy. Chip.
Yeah, I'm headed for the hills, guys. Don't forget to vote. I put the link in there, and we'll see y'all on Thursday, if not before. Tight lines.
Take it easy, Chip. Thanks, buddy.
Have a good night.
But, it's definitely something.
The tarpon fishing game is probably one of the most fun fishing. I personally love to do the tarpon thing. I don't think you can get much better of a fight out of a fish than from a tarpon.
Yeah, well, and there's a lot to be said to hooking a fish that weighs anywhere from 60 to 100 plus pounds, as you've caught before, out of a plastic boat in the ocean.
Yeah.
And landing him in somewhat of a quick manner. But that's actually good that we brought this up, because that leads into a topic I was going to discuss next week, but I'll just go ahead and start talking about it now. Tackle and the right gear. I get guys all the time that come into the tackle shop, and they want to buy this combo because it looks cool, or they want to buy a combo because they heard it's a good one, but they haven't done their research, and they don't think about the species they're going to try and target with that particular rod and reel combo or line class that they want to use. For you freshwater guys, it kind of doesn't have much relevancy, except I guess if you're fishing for really big catfish and that kind of thing, or even big gar or sturgeon or something. But don't under rig for fish, if that makes any sense, in the summertime. Like, I won't even target big redfish in the summertime down here, because the water's just way too hot. And if you hook a redfish, it doesn't matter if you hook them on 20-pound test, if you hook them on 10-pound test, if you hook them on 30-pound test, if you're catching fish that are over 40 inches and you're trying to get those fish to the kayak in a quick manner, it's not going to happen. By the time they finally get back to you, they're almost dead as it is from exhaustion. There's so little bit of oxygen in the water down here this time of year that it doesn't make sense. So if you should so feel the need to target those fish in the summertime, try and do it with the right gear. Don't go after a 50-inch redfish with a 2500 Stratic rigged with 10-pound Power Pro and a 12-pound leader. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Same thing as if you were to go offshore and try and target these tarpon off the beach. You can do it in a flats boat with a 4000 Stratic, as Scott has proven. But what's that?
The bag's old. I don't know. You just got to think about what's going through your head after 2 hours of fighting a fish. Everything starts coming into relevance. You're like, well, I've just spent 2 hours fighting this fish. If it breaks off, there goes 2 hours of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's hotter than I'll get out. And I don't know. It's just definitely prepare yourself for what you're trying to fish for.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, like, to me, I wouldn't go off the beach with anything smaller than an 8,000 size spinning reel, spooled with at least 50-pound Power Pro. And I wouldn't use anything smaller than, say, a 60 or 80-pound fluorocarbon. And I would absolutely hammer the drag down, and I'd make that fish pull me across that ocean with all he's got to put the whooping on him as fast as I could, so I can get my hands on him, get the hook out of his face if possible, and let him go and let him do his thing. fly fishing from the kayak for giant tarpon, to me, doesn't make any sense whatsoever for me, because I don't want to put the fish under that kind of unneeded stress off the beach. It's too many big sharks. Right. There's too many other problems that can go wrong. And to me, I don't want to kill the thing just to get a picture. You know, it's a cool challenge, but at the same time, I can catch the tarpon that are in the river for anywhere from 5 to 60 pounds on fly. I don't need to worry about targeting the giant ones offshore and trying to, you know, set any kind of land speed records or anything like that, getting towed to the Bahamas. So, just, you know, something to think about. You know, you guys are going to be fishing.
Yet again, though, you know, those water temps are way up there too. And I mean, tarpon aren't so affected by it, but just like that redfish that I caught not too long ago that I showed you, Chuck, that it was, what, 37 inches.
Yeah.
It took me 20 minutes to revive that fish. And I caught him on a 4,000 Stradic with a 15-pound braid on that. So
yeah. I mean,
irrelevant to how hot the water is. Pretty nasty.
Yeah, I jump out of the kayak all the time to revive fish. I mean, I'll stand in the water with one for an hour if I have to, just to make sure he swims off and he's not upside down. And, you know, it is what it is. It's a product of the environment. You can't not go fishing. We're all embedded with this sickness that it draws us to the water, so we have to go. And to me, for me, it just seems that there's definitely a level there where you have to reach and just understand that it just doesn't make sense to put the fish under that kind of stress. But you know, we're in August. We only have a little bit longer, and then we'll start getting that cooler water temperatures. I can tell you that the river's cooled down a little bit with all the rain we've been having every afternoon.
We're hoping for that storm.
Oh yeah, well, I'm hoping that we get rain and a little. Yeah, it's funny. I hope we're getting a little bit of rain and a little bit of wind from it. I don't really feel like getting hammered by a hurricane, but I think that the rain that it could potentially dump on us would be a good thing for fishing. So, you know, I'll take it.
Me too.
I think it would be an excellent thing for fishing, that's for sure.
Well, you know, and
arrowhead hunting.
Arrowhead, oh, see? There you go. Washes the dirt away and you can go look for arrowheads. That's pretty cool.
Right.
So that's definitely something to think about when you're fishing that hot water is the care of the fish and the tackle that's needed to deal with these fish in a timely fashion. In the wintertime, it doesn't matter. When the water's nice and cold and there's tons of oxygen in it, you can go and catch 52-inch redfish or 50-plus-inch redfish on 10-pound all you want. It's not a big deal. If they peel off half a spool of line, drag you halfway across the lagoon, and then you know, you get them up, as soon as you pop a hook out of their face, they're beating you to death trying to get back in the water. So it's definitely a different world in the winter. But so
it's a much better bite as well in the wintertime for us down here.
Well, I think in pure numbers, I think it is. I don't think that the fish themselves are any better in the winter than they are in the summertime. In fact, I think it's the opposite for trout, I've learned.
Trout are definitely loving this hot water. That's
for
really?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
so
crazy.
It's the opposite
here.
Yeah. See, if any of you guys that are listening or are going to download the podcast ever want to go and catch some big trout, now's the time to take a road trip over here to the Space Coast. We get some giant trout over here. I know folks that have caught fish up to 10 pounds already, and that's a big, big trout. And most of those fish are coming off of topwater plugs. You can get them on soft plastics, but there's no better way to catch a big trout than on topwater. It's just way exciting. And, when I went last Monday, I used a skitter walk in the bone color, the larger the skitter walks. But I know they've been hammering skitter walks, have been hammering Spook Juniors, Badonkadonks, just about anything. You throw it out there and work it over the grass in the right area, you're going to get hit. But take time with those fish too. Even those big breeder trout, even though they're crazy and they love to just go nuts and hammer those topwater plugs in the summertime, and they do feed really aggressively in the summertime, they're still pretty soft.
Pretty vulnerable.
Yeah, as it comes to fighting for any length of time or putting any unneeded stress on them. Get them back in the water as quick as you can. Take a picture. Down here, we have a problem with worms in the trout in the winter. In the summertime. The meat tends to get some worms in it. And I don't know. I've cut open up trout before where they're just so infested. The meat's so infested with worms that you can't even pick them out. There's just so many of them. So unless you absolutely feel the need to make a trout sandwich with a little bit of worm in it, throw those things back. And they've gotten beat up over the last couple of years in the freeze. And we can use all the breeders that we can right now. So
definitely seen a large number of them coming back, though. That's good. Haven't seen a trout fishery this good in quite some time.
Dude, I've personally never caught this many trout over 20 inches that I have in the last few trips. It's been absolutely incredible.
It's actually nice to see. Nice to see the trout coming back, especially the larger ones. It seems like there for a while we didn't have very many big trout. It was all those little small ones that you're almost disappointed to catch. But definitely getting some bigger trout this year for sure.
Yeah, and I don't know if it has a lot to do with with the fact that the seasons, or the people fishing the area, I should say, have let off those fish a little bit, not try to harvest their bag limits on a daily basis like people have been known to do before. But I don't know, man. You're right, though. It's gotten much, much better. I can't tell you how many trout I've caught this year over 20 inches. Now that I think about it,
it's been pretty amazing. Pretty good. All right, Chuck. Well, I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah, man. I'm going to wrap up the show right now. Scott, I appreciate you calling in, buddy. Kayla,
no
I appreciate
problem.
You calling in. Guys, I appreciate y'all listening in, being on the chat board. It means a lot to me that I got some folks that are live. The podcast is always available for download off of iTunes. You can get it right here off of Blog Talk Radio as well. Make sure that you take the time to go to yakangler.com and sign up if you're not already a member. It's a free website to join. There's a lot of really good people on board there. And there's a lot of really good information you can get from them. Everything from fishing locations to articles, there's a forum, there's tide charts and just upcoming events and all kinds of things that those guys post, and they take their time. This is all on their dime. They do it for us as fellow kayakers, so we definitely would appreciate it if you guys were to get out there and do that a little bit, get involved with yakangler.com. Also, too, it's a really cool way to kind of get your writing out there. If you guys like to write, want to do any writing, get with Mark or Adam from yakangler.com. They can always use articles, how-tos, reviews, regional fishing reports, and it's an easy way to get published. You get put on there. They got a really cool thing working right now through Google where it'll show you as the author of whatever it is that you wrote about. So it's pretty cool. Also, too, take the time to check out my Facebook page. It's Facebook.com/ Charles Levi Jr. Friend request me if you're not already one of my friends. Check out the fine folks who have put together the Kayak Angler Choice Awards over at SurveyMonkey.com. Vote for your favorite if it's up there. If not, write it in as you heard. Always the most important thing, though, is be safe and take some other folks fishing. Get other people involved in the sport. You know, we really appreciate it. It's what we're here for. We put on the shows every night to try and give you guys some pretty good up-to-date information on where to go and how to go catch fish and this, that, and the other. And the more people we have tuning in, listening, the better our shows will be. And be active in the chat room. I really appreciate the questions. Shell Seeker, I appreciate you stopping in and joining us tonight. We've got a whole list of shows coming up throughout the week. I'm going to go ahead and give you the quick rundown of that, as I always do on Monday, being the kickoff guy. And I also appreciate you guys listening to me tonight, even though Monday Night Football is going on right now. That's pretty cool that I actually have people that are listening to me rather than watching football. So Tuesday's show at 8 o'clock Eastern is Rob Abad, Batcast DeVore. Great host, great show. It puts on has a lot of really good information that he gives out. Also usually gives out a bad back cast or a badtastic prize pack. Sorry. So if you guys listen in, usually he's got something to give away. 10 o'clock Eastern on Tuesday night, Isaac the Nothing Miller from over in the great state of Oregon. He does his show, mainly talking about the West Coast fishery, catching ling cods and all kinds of craziness, rockfish and Dungeness crabs from his kayak, which is pretty cool. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, we got Mark the Landing Crew Wheeler, who's from Virginia Beach, Virginia area. He is both a freshwater and saltwater guy. He does a heck of a job with his show. Tune into that. That'd be a good show for you, Shell, Shell Seeker, to do to listen in and get some freshwater type of information. And Thursday night, he was my co-host tonight. Chip, the tree hugger Gibson, hosts the round table. And apparently we're going to get to hear some more of the top five, top 10, kayak choice award, standings for, angler of the year and guide of the year. So that'll be pretty cool. But, yeah, that's all I got. I went about an hour and a half tonight. Please do me a favor and, check out those other shows. Again, hit me up on Facebook. If you're not already a friend, I appreciate it. Send me an email if you have a question, good, bad, or otherwise. I appreciate any info that I get from you guys, input and so forth. And I look forward to doing the show again next Monday. I'm hoping I should have my guest next week should be Troy Denson from Mount This Fish Company. He does a heck of a job with replica fish mounts. And the freshwater show is Mark Wheeler's show. He does his show on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern. Let me double check. Yes, Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. It's Mark DeLand and Crew Wheeler. That guy is a bass-catching fool. Loves to throw frogs. But I definitely appreciate you guys listening in. And like I say, take a kid fishing. Take your spouse fishing. Fishing's good for the soul. And as I always sign off, I'm going to wish my boys good night, sleep tight, have good dreams. Trey and Logan, I love you guys. Good night, guys. Thank you very much.